Now the Treasury Department is warning that the federal government will run out of money to pay its bills sometime this summer if Congress and the president can't agree on raising the debt ceiling. It would be the first time that the U.S. has defaulted on its debt. On Monday, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy went to the New York Stock Exchange to argue that any agreement to increase the debt limit would have to include cuts to spending.
We are now $31 trillion in debt. That's more the entire economy of America, 20% more. Think for a moment. That is unsustainable. Without exaggeration, American debt is a ticking time bomb.
A lot going on today on the story. Earlier, a bipartisan group of House members released their outline of an alternative to the Speaker's Republican-only outline, while President Biden says that the country's credit is non-negotiable, and House Republican leaders unveiled what they call the Limit, Save, Grow Act this afternoon, with a debt ceiling increase and spending cuts, including a rollback of student loan relief and reversing a boost in IRS funding. The White House continues to say that raising the debt ceiling should not come with any strings attached because it's only covering the costs of previously agreed upon federal funding. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see any room for a bipartisan compromise on funding the federal government? Would you be willing to see the U.S. default on its debts for the first time? Are there spending cuts you'd like to see, revenue increases? And do you have any questions about how all this works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Jasmine Ferrier is a professor of political science at the University of Louisville, where her teaching and research includes all three branches of the U.S. government. Her latest book is called Constitutional Dysfunction on Trial. Jasmine, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we dive into dueling plans and outlines, can you remind us what the debt ceiling is and why we have it?
The debt ceiling is the total amount of money that the United States government is authorized to borrow to meet existing legal obligations. Those obligations include Social Security, Medicare, military salaries, interest on the national debt, tax refunds, and other payments. In other words, the borrowing that the government must issue through Treasury bonds usually is the difference between revenue in and spending out. So every year, we have, at least in the last two decades, we've been running deficits. Deficits are annual differences between revenue, money coming in, and spending obligations passed by Congress and the president. All of those deficits put together is the debt.
We've seen standoffs over increasing this debt ceiling before. 2011 was, I think, the last really close call. What do people see as the consequences if we hit the point where we haven't increased the debt ceiling and we can't make up that shortfall anymore?
Well, that would be loosely called default, but default would have many options. So default could take the form of not paying investors who have bought Treasury securities. The reason why the United States is a very attractive market is our dependability. We've never defaulted. And what that means is that payments will always be on time and we will honor our debts. So the question would be whether or not those investors would be prioritized over, say, Social Security beneficiaries. If there's not enough money to go around, there would have to be some decisions about who gets paid first. But loosely, all of that could be called default, regardless of who is prioritized.
And there's concerns about what that would mean, various kinds of default would mean for the U.S. and even global economies, right?
Yes. It's hard to say with precision because it has never happened. But I'm looking at something called Moody's Analytics. So Moody's, of course, is a ratings agency that looks at these types of situations very closely. So Moody's Analytics and other rating agencies can only assume that there would be fallout, and that could take different forms. The economy could shrink because there would be fewer dollars in people's pockets if doctors are not paid, hospitals are not paid for Medicare, if Social Security payments don't go through. And of course, there can be market ramifications if our treasuries are not worth the investor's dollar.
So President Biden and the White House have been saying the debt ceiling isn't the time for this negotiation. We can do negotiations when we talk about the budget. House Republicans have been saying, hang on, it's a perfect time to talk about making spending cuts. Well, here we have today, just this afternoon, a House Republican outline of the cuts they would like to see go along with a debt ceiling increase. We're still digging through this thing right now. Jasmine, what is standing out to you so far?
Well, the president has said clean, and this is not clean, although it may be bipartisan. So the president has said it's a clean debt ceiling increase. No negotiation over policy. The debt ceiling, according to President Biden, is paying the bill at the end of the meal when you've already ordered and eaten it. That's not the time to talk about your budget for eating out. So he's saying it should be clean, but there, of course, is history where presidents have negotiated. Of course, President Obama had to negotiate with a Republican majority, and there were spending decreases on the table. So presidents have approached this crisis differently, and our system is complex in part because we have different majorities in different positions on different electoral clocks, and they have to work together.
And we've been waiting on Speaker McCarthy and fellow Republicans to give some details. We have at least some now. Not everything is hashed out, but spending cuts as part of their plan, cuts to the IRS, student debt relief cuts. What stood out to you when it comes to what they have on the table in exchange for a non-clean debt ceiling increase?
The biggest parts of the deficit in the last two decades are tax decreases, military spending increases, and entitlement spending increases, including the Medicare Part D passed under the second Bush administration. In addition, entitlement spending fluctuates by qualification. So when there are more people qualifying for Social Security retirement benefits, the cost will go up. So this is a combination of decision-making that has taken place over decades. And if we want to balance the budget or lower our debt, it is true that there are lots of opportunities annually for appropriations discussions. And then there are the bigger picture discussions. Appropriations annually are only about a third of the spending that the United States is obligated for every year. Two-thirds are authorizing bills, such as Social Security. So unless we decide to solve all of these problems somehow, it's going to be difficult to say that any one of them could automatically create the need for pushing the deficit ceiling down the road. It's simply too big of an ask.
Talking to Jasmine Farrier, professor of political science at the University of Louisville, looking at the debt ceiling, Republican plan on the table now, at least an outline of a plan. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Let's go to a caller now. Robert is with us in Appleton. Robert, hi.
Yeah, just a couple facts. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. They're not entitled to their own facts. 25% of the entire national debt was run up in the last 4 years under the Trump administration. There were four debt increase with no drama. The 14th Amendment says that the full faith and credit of the United States will not be questioned. The crisis in the United States has to do with the fact that historically, the top 1% in corporations are paying less taxes historically than they ever have in the past. Cutting revenue to the IRS is insane. That's the only part of the government where when you spend more money, you get more money. The one intelligent, you know, thing that's come out of this discussion is there has been something put forward by a bipartisan group of politicians that talked about putting $1 trillion worth of additional revenue. So you add taxes in order to raise $1 trillion. You invest that in the equity markets for 20 years. And so that when you have the crisis that is fully, you know, predictable of more people retiring.
Robert, I'm going to jump in because you gave us a lot to talk about already. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. I want to get to a couple of things Robert brought up, Jasmine. First of all, he mentioned the Republican plan here would say, okay, a bunch of money that was put into the IRS by the Inflation Reduction Act, most of that would come out. Robert says, wait, this is the part of the government that actually can bring in revenue. What do you think of that specific notion of clawing back that IRS money?
Yes, I think it's a very interesting idea, and Democrats have been pushing that considerably, because if the existing law were enforced, deficits would be lower. And it is definitely a good political point to make about the relative ease with that higher earners seem to have escaping their tax obligations under the law. So that is an important point to make. I want to go back to Robert's point about the 14th Amendment, because I think this is also worth considering. There are lots of ways to deal with the debt ceiling. And one of the ways that could be on the table, I'm not sure if it is, but it could be on the table as we inch closer to what they call the X date, is that President Biden could essentially suspend the debt ceiling unilaterally. There's a section of the 14th Amendment that says that the United States debts will be honored and they can't be questioned. And while there's a Civil War context to that constitutional clause, it is nevertheless there in the 14th Amendment. It is not obvious that Congress needs to be a part of this discussion, and we can go to this if you'd like, in a little bit more depth, but there have been different ways that Congress has been in and out of this discussion. It's by no means required that Congress has to get involved in the debt ceiling in this way.
Interesting. Yeah. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Well, the debt ceiling was itself created around 1917 to help with the sale of war bonds under President Wilson in World War I. And in the 1970s, under a rule that was named after former House leader Richard Gephardt, the Gephardt rule said that automatically the debt ceiling would be increased by the annual passage of budget bills. So let's think about the logic of that. By creating the need for a deficit, by creating the need to borrow, why wouldn't Congress piggyback the debt ceiling directly onto the obligations and the revenues that they seem to have agreed upon? That was suspended. That actually took place for about 15 years. And then when Newt Gingrich and the Republican majority came in for the 104th Congress in January of 1995, the Gephardt rule was suspended. And that created these brinksmanship moments, which you might say you can quote any figure on either side. A good crisis is an opportunity to get attention to an issue of great importance. This is a crisis that the Republican Party has said time and again is worth discussing.
We're talking to Jasmine Farrier, political science professor at the University of Louisville. She's with us for a look at the politics surrounding the partisan debate over lifting the federal debt ceiling. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how our federal government pays its bills? Do you have suggestions that you'd have for maybe our congressional delegation from Wisconsin about how you want to see them tackle the annual deficit, the overall debt? Call it at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Jasmine Farrier, professor of political science at the University of Louisville. We're looking at the partisan divide over raising the federal debt limit, the possibility of some kind of bipartisan compromise, what might happen if that compromise is not reached. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Matt is with us in Mequon. Hi, Matt.
Thanks for having me on. I just would like to make an observation. About 80%+ of the debt that currently exists in the United States was put on the country's credit card over the last 20 years. It's far more than what we put on in the first, 240 years of this country. The vast majority of that debt went to wars that were unpaid for, went to bailing out Wall Street in 2008, and then bailing out Wall Street against during the pandemic. Both parties are complicit in it. They voted for these bailouts. They voted for these wars with no way to pay for them. And now they're asking the majority of the country that pays their fair share in taxes to pick up the tab for all these other people that aren't paying their fair share in taxes. This is not a spending issue. It is a revenue issue.
Matt, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Jasmine, I mean, when you look at charts of the federal debt, it does shoot up a lot over that last 20-year period. What do you think of Matt's thoughts on the sources? What's causing that increase?
Well, he makes a very important point that it is very difficult to balance the budget or come close to it without revenue. and tax cuts that were temporary under the Bush administration at the early part of the century, of course, George W. Bush, those were temporary tax increases. I'm sorry, tax decreases. And yes, I'm sorry about that. And then when Congress issues a sunset, it's usually to argue that we will figure out the consequences later and escape any consequences right now. Under President Obama, I believe that 4/5 of those tax decreases were made permanent. And of course, he had political need to negotiate with the opposite party. So, of course, taxes were reduced again under President Trump. So, yes, the revenue is the problem. And there's no question, again, the math was correct, that most of this debt has been accumulated over the past four presidencies, two Democrats and two Republicans, and all permutations of House and Senate majorities, single Democratic governance, Republican governance, and mixed in both directions.
Thanks a lot for that call, Matt, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Ruth with us in Eau Claire. Hi, Ruth.
Hi. I appreciate the conversation. Thank you. And I appreciate the callers as well. I think we have to be careful when we talk about Social Security as we talk about the overall revenue and budget, because Social Security is a very different animal. This is money that comes out of, you know, payroll taxes that are there as insurance for people later in life or for other reasons with hardships in life. So I worry about talking about throwing Social Security in the mix when, in fact, it's something very different than our other taxes and our other revenues.
Ruth, thanks a lot for the call. And Jasmine, I admit, I have conceptual problems with how Social Security works. You hear that it is, as Ruth says, this separate system. But then I hear people say, well, you can't fix the deficit without tackling things like Social Security and Medicare. How does it fit into the puzzle?
Well, Social Security is, of course, a series of authorizing laws. So I think that Ruth's question, and again, by the way, Rob, your callers are very sharp, and they're following these issues closely, and I want to commend you for that and them. So Ruth's point is very important. So this is not subject to a negotiation at the 11th hour in a debt ceiling increase crisis. Social Security was created by law in 1935, and it's been amended ever since. It is not subject to annual appropriations. It is the type of entitlement that would require separate legislative action. So there has been, of course, a looming question about whether or not the demographics of Social Security still work. The way it works right now is that we have a separate trust fund that is the source of money where your payroll taxes go and payments to Social Security recipients go out. When the Social Security trust fund is in surplus, the government, of course, borrows it, and there are some IOUs that are part of the debt ceiling there. But when there are not enough workers, then Social Security will be unable to meet its legal obligations. There are a couple of ways of fixing this. So one way is to take it out of this trust fund scenario and put it right into the regular budget. And that means you can shoot up as much deficit as the ceiling will allow. That's probably more acceptable on to the Democratic side. On the Republican side, they would say that this situation is nuanced, but at the end of the day, Social Security was not meant to support people for decades when lives are longer, medical advances are stronger, and demographics have shifted away from the surpluses that Social Security used to have. So that's a legitimate question. I'm not saying it's a legitimate argument. I'm saying that Congress has the right with the president to negotiate the types of obligations that are pressing on the deficit every year and the debt overall. Just the way we seem to not blink, Democratic or Republican presidents alike, at increasing military spending, $850 billion this year. And according to the Cost of War Project by Brown University, $6 trillion have been spent since 9/11 and not a penny raised in new revenue.
Thanks a lot for that call. Jeremy is with us now in Green Bay. Jeremy, hi.
Hi. Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. I had a question. I hear this point a lot, heard Speaker McCarthy make it again today, that just like a household, the United States government needs to balance our budget, needs to not take in less than we put out. But that always seemed like a funny comparison because households don't have the Federal Reserve. So I'm wondering if that comparison actually makes more sense than it sounds on the surface to me. Thank you so much.
Jeremy, thanks for the call. That analogy between the federal government and a household budget, Jasmine.
Well, let's imagine that we've eaten out, as I said before, we've already eaten the meal, we're presented with the bill, and we decide it's now a good time to talk about the debt that we're going to incur with our credit card. There, of course, can be good debt, bad debt, car debt, house debt, investments in student loans. The United States can sustain debt. There's no question about that. And in fact, if we remember that in the 2000 election, when it looked like we were going to have surpluses as far as the eye could see, some economists thought that that actually wasn't very healthy either. So if we're going to make a household comparison, let's say a few things. One is most households have debt. And two, the government should have a conversation about debt before the debt is incurred, not when the bill is due.
Thanks a lot for that call. Just in our last half a minute or so, Jasmine, do you see prospects for a friendly negotiated compromise here on time?
I think it's very fraught, to be honest with you, because the majorities are so slim. If Kevin McCarthy is governing by a four-person majority, he can't afford to lose a single person. If we recall from his 15 rounds as speaker designate, before he was officially in the role, he made a lot of side deals. It seems that some of those side deals are coming back right now as pressure from the right because he promised that he would use the debt ceiling to negotiate these types of spending decreases. Let's go over to the Senate side. We have a very slim majority for the Democrats. Where is the wiggle room on either side to get something done without reaching across the aisle? That's what I worry about.
Jasmine, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Rob. It was a pleasure.
That was Jasmine Farrier, political science professor at the University of Louisville. She's author of books including, most recently, Constitutional Dysfunction on Trial. She joined us with the latest on the approaching debt ceiling limit and the political divide between the two parties preventing an agreement on federal funding.